Everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me here, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions, they trounced the Dallas Cowboys in AT&T Stadium 47-9 on Sunday. And you know, there's a day full of rejoicing for Lions fans. Oh, wait, it wasn't. Because only the curse can get involved in a giant such as this. Can't even enjoy a 38-point victory, lose Aiden Hutchinson most likely for the season. I don't there was like a rumor, and I'm acting like this happened weeks ago when it happened, you know, 4 days ago. But like the rumor was he'll be back for the Super Bowl. He'll be able to play in the Super
Bowl. That's still a rumor. No, that was his a source close to Aiden and his family are basically said if it's a 4 to 6 month recovery process, he could be back in 4 months, which means he could be back in the Super Bowl. But I think the hard part with that is that would mean like he is healed and then all of a sudden in football shape and ready to go. You know what I mean? Like it's
right.
I think and that's plus, very yeah.
Source close to the family, like you could. Eric, you could be like, so somebody could come to me. Nobody's heard from you in weeks. Hey, Joe, how is Eric doing? It's like, oh, he's just has a bout of rheumatic fever. He's going to be fine. He's going to be back in like 2 weeks. Is rheumatic fever? That's an illness, right? Like I didn't combine two other illnesses.
All right.
He'll be back in a couple of weeks, you know, and I don't know, you know, like you're not returning my text because you're deathly ill, but I'm going to make up something. Hey, he'll be back for the Super Bowl. I don't know. He's done for the year. It's too bad.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess the thing we have to, like, if you want to contextualize it, James Houston broke his lower leg ankle in the same, you know, in a similar fashion. And he was able to return during the playoffs, but he wasn't even impactful. And he did it in week two, not in week six. So that's a full month later. It's just unrealistic. Like
he's got a work ethic on him.
Well, he may be walking.
Houston's in the doghouse. You know, this could be certainly part of it. You know, goes back to last year.
You know, like I think Hutchinson could be walking and maybe like starting to run and stuff like that. But I can't imagine he's anywhere near where he would need to be in order to play. When the Super Bowl rolls around. So I think it's wishful thinking, of course.
Right.
But
and there's no reason to really, like, nobody knows. Hutchinson doesn't even know.
Sure.
You know, we're not going to know until we get closer anyway. It's fun to speculate, though.
He's literally in a hospital bed. He can't do anything as of right now. He can't project 4 months from now. So, I mean, look, he's injured himself before in this fashion. And, I mean, not exactly, but like he's injured himself before. I think and he's come back and he's been better than ever. And so they put some steel rods in place. Everything gets good. All surgery looks, you know, all positive. And so he will make his return. He will go into the off season, and probably get a contract extension and, he'll be great. He should be, you know, ready to go
right as rain.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they put him out there in the spring or anything like that, but
why bother?
Right. I think come training camp expectations are he's practicing and ready to go. So,
I like how
No, go ahead.
I like how he had surgery like during the game. Like we were getting, you know, reports like at 8 PM, like, oh, he's already out of surgery and you know, he's doing fine. Like, and I'm sure there's tons of orthopedic surgeons. I mean, this is an injury that I have the same injury. Like, I've gone through the same surgery. So, like, there's tons of people who have, I'm sure there's tons of doctors who are very good at performing that surgery. You know, no second opinion needed.
Yeah. No, it's from what I gather, because I know a couple, people in the medical field, and they've said it's not an unusual surgery and it's not overly complicated. It's basically just get in there, reset, insert a steel rod for stability, you know, put it back together and then just let it heal. And then it's just, you got to go through the healing process. Fortunately, it was relatively clean. It wasn't like he, it wasn't a compound fracture, so it wasn't like they had to like put stuff back together, like in put it stuff
Put it
back
back
inside
into
his
the
body.
skin.
Yeah, right. So he's a good, so those are all positive things. I mean, the downside obviously is now they have to get creative in trying to replace him. They are already down a couple of edge rushers from earlier injuries in the season. They also lost Pecco. So that's again even more defensive line depth that they're going to be without. So they're going to have to turn to kind of a collaborative effort to try and replace his snaps. You're not going to be able to replace his production. You're not going to be able to put a one guy in and just replicate what he did. But you have to find a way to work as a community to try and, do your best to replicate what he did. And it's not going to be the same. And you're going to have to be more simplistic in what you're asking of your defensive line, yet more complex in your scheme. And it's doable, but there's things that are going to have to change, because he's not going to be with the team anymore. So I know it's very end of the world, end of the season type of thing for a lot of people,
There's a
but
lot of worried people out there.
certainly, certainly. Look, I get it. You're down all three of your starters, starting edge rushers, and so it's definitely worrisome. At the same time, I thought they did well in his absence. They still created pressure. They were finding ways to scheme it up. Certainly helped that the Lions had a big lead, and all they had to do, they could basically like kind of tee off on Dak. That certainly played a factor into it. But there's a lot of talent on this defense, and so I think you change up how things work. You change up the scheme a little bit, and you emphasize different players as opposed to him. And you can still make it work. There's going to be a learning curve, but it's still definitely workable. And like I said, a lot of talent on this team. So it's not the end of the season by any stretch. And I think they're actually going to be, able to overcome it.
Yeah, we'll dig into that a little bit more as we go on. Let's start with the transactions. We already talked about Aiden Hutchinson and Kyle Pecco to IR. One of the corresponding moves was edge defender Isaiah Thomas, signed off the Bengals practice squad. Now he goes straight onto the 53-man roster, correct? Being signed
Correct.
off another team's practice squad.
Correct. Yeah, he's guaranteed 3 weeks of salary. So no matter what happens, he's going to get paid 3 weeks worth of salary. So that's the incentive for him to agree to the contract, is he will make more in those 3 weeks than he would in like 16 weeks on the, or 18 weeks on the practice squad, right? So there's a financial incentive for him to go ahead and sign with the Lions. For the Lions, this is a depth move. You're looking at a guy who fits the physical profile of what you're looking for in a defensive end. He has the physicality that fits the profile of a defensive end, but he lacks, a lot of things that would have put him on a 53-man roster earlier in the season. It'll be a little underwhelming for people looking for, a guy with a lot of
Right.
pass rush capability, but he's a depth player, and that's the way you have to kind of look at him. He's going to be, a guy who comes in and gives maybe Josh Pascal some breaks, or he can supplement Levi a little bit or something. Like there's some things that he can do that helps kind of round off the roster. Now they still have two open spots, so they're not done adding, and I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up adding edge rushers or defensive linemen, I guess I should say, with both those spots. Maybe one edge rusher, one defensive lineman, or defensive tackle, maybe a hybrid. There's some ways that they can go. If they elect to trade for someone, again, I think that would be a defensive lineman as well. So I do think they're going to add a couple more pieces to this defensive front. which should give them a little bit more flexibility.
All right, you mentioned the two roster spots remain open. They were at 52, putting Hutchinson and Pekka on IR got them down to 50, putting Isaiah Thomas on gets them to 51. So the two spots remain open to get to 53. David Montgomery and Aleem McNeil get contract extensions. Now this happened in advance of the Dallas game. It was right.
David's
Oh,
Montgomery's
David
was,
was, yeah, but
and
Aleem
then
McNeil
Aleem
wasn't.
was correct. Yeah, it was
All right.
just a couple days later.
I like one, but not the other. I
Okay.
have a feeling David Montgomery's going to be done, like before, these last two. We'll see.
Well, if you look at David's contract, it's really not that significant of a change overall, right?
Oh,
It's
but
basically
it added 2 years.
it. Well, it does, but it doesn't. It's not like a big increase in a financial commitment. You're still it's basically just taking the deal that they already have and kind of just like extending it a couple more years. It's you're not giving them a big raise. You're not guaranteeing a lot of money. You're putting the most of the guaranteed stuff's going to be in the time that you would probably have him under contract anyways. There's an out in that final year if he does kind of, his production does fall.
Because he'll be 30 in his final year.
Yeah, but again, that's we'll see how it goes. I'm not overly concerned about his contract because it's going to be one of these contracts that you look at now and you're like, okay, he's top 10 in money, and but by the and then when you look 3 or 4 years down the road, he's much higher. But in reality, as players get new contracts and blah blah blah, he's going to end up being much
Yeah,
much lower
lower on
down.
the list.
Yeah,
Yeah.
right. So this will be a contract that I think looks a lot better as it progresses. I'm completely comfortable with it. It's basically just a we like what we're doing. We don't want to have to negotiate with you in a couple years, and so let's just extend you a couple more now and get it done. I think Montgomery is such a critical part of what they do, and the mentality is a perfect fit for what they're trying to accomplish. He did a big interview tour in over the bye week and leading up to the Cowboys game, and I think it really showed people the type of character person that he is. Like he had an interview with Kay Adams where he was talking about, she was trying to ask him, like, what is the thing that can happen on the field for you that gets you excited? Like, is it you overcome 1,000 yards? Like you gain 1,000 yards on the ground. Is that a milestone? And you're gonna be happy for that. And then if I know you're gonna be happy, then I'll be happy for you. And so she was trying to get him to like say 100-yard game or this many touchdowns or whatever, right? Like she wanted something physical that he could put out there and say, look, this is the thing I'm looking to achieve. And his answer was, if any of those things that he accomplishes, like touchdowns or yardage or whatever, that there's no like long-term impact of that. And he said, but if we win a Super Bowl, then that has a financial impact on the city of Detroit. That's going to bring attention to them. It's going to help the city. It's going to help them grow. It's interesting the altruistic answer when she was really trying to pin him down to a specific like selfish stat that he would be happy about. And instead he went the altruistic route, which I think was very emblematic of the type of person that he is. So I was very excited to see him get that extension because I think he's an incredibly high character person.
Yeah,
So
and
you
I'm not
like the,
against.
oh, go ahead,
I
go ahead.
like Montgomery. Personally, I like Montgomery. You're just concerned about running backs as they
Sure,
age.
sure.
Hopefully,
There's
he'll be
you.
fine at age 30. We'll see. I know you
Yeah, no,
like,
you,
at this
you
point, you like it more than I do.
yeah. And you're not alone. There's a lot of people that fall into that running back group, right? A lot of people that say, the cost benefit of extending running backs or re-signing running backs isn't, it just doesn't, it's not, it doesn't pay off, right?
There's diminishing returns.
Exactly. And I get that. The odds definitely bear out that way as well. But I don't mind. I'm a little bit more flexible because I think it's such a critical spot, and especially for this organization, the way that they want to run the ball, you need that. And they're so high on character that, again, I think it all makes sense to me. So give me your thoughts on Aleem's extension then.
More pleased with the Aleem McNeil extension. He's now what, the fourth highest paid defensive tackle in the NFL. He's also several years younger than the three guys that are ahead of him. So just like you said with the Montgomery contract, like this contract's only going to look better 3 years down the road, right? Because that doesn't kick in till next year, so he'll only be 2 years into that deal. As long as he remains healthy, that's the big question about McNeil over his career. He's missed some games. He looks great this year. They give, they're giving him $100 million, and he does not, have the number. He has no Pro Bowls, no All Pros, but as long as he stays healthy, he's staring that in the face this year. I like the McNeil deal. He's been more of a force every week, and we're going to really need him. And I don't know. I don't know if Hutchinson, it probably doesn't, as they've been negotiating this for months, but it is interesting that it gets done right after Hutchinson gets hurt. Is there one sticking point where finally, McNeil's group is like, hey, you might as well give it to us now and let's get this over with. And the Lions be like, yeah, all right, we'll do it. We got to get somebody. We need to do something positive this week. So I really like the McNeil contract. The only concern is injury concern, but that's true of any player signing a long-term deal. So.
He's a player they're absolutely going to need in order to overcome Aiden's absence. And so, yeah, I mean, you saw it. You saw it against the Cowboys. They were
Yeah, he
doing
was great.
stunts with him, and I thought he was very good. And he's been building as well. He's a very impactful player beyond what you see flashing, watching live, and even the stuff you're watching live is pretty impressive as well. So I think there's a big future for him, and it's nice to see the was it the third member of the Brad Holmes' initial
The
class
2021
get an
class, yeah.
extension. Yeah, it's
Shelling out a lot of cash to that 2021 class. Still,
yeah.
like, do they want to keep Melifonwu? We'll see, because he's, been hurt for so long. You'd think they want to keep Derek Barnes, even though he's been hurt, and being hurt might not deliver him such a big contract, which may even be more palatable for the Lions, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Like, so not done with that class yet. It's been an excellent class.
Yeah,
The other thing,
I was gonna
sorry,
say, I
go
think they could re-sign all three of those guys. All three could end up coming back. Both Barnes and Melifonwu could get team-friendly deals. Even Levi, with his history,
Yeah,
I think
Levi
isn't
owns three
gonna
deals.
demand as much. But I think a Levi, you're gonna is definitely a player that fits what they want to accomplish.
Well, Levi is one of the guys who could really make something happen out of the Hutchinson injury. Like, this is his true opening. If he could become more of the guy, whereas Hutchinson's healthy, getting all these sacks, and if Onwuzurike has a good season, it's like, yeah, well, he's helped by Hutch, because Hutch is so dominant. He has the ability on the other side to kind of like fly under the radar. Well, not anymore. But if he, plays well, like, that's only going to bode well for him going to his next contract. And the other thing with McNeil, now that, Hutchinson was the heart and soul of the defense, right? Like, and he very much a potential defensive player of the year at, when he got hurt. That's probably where he was trending. First team All Pro, Pro Bowler, all of that. The McNeil contract now kind of like, well, Hutchinson's hurt. Aleem McNeil, you are now the heart and soul of this defense. And that's not true long term, because it's going to be Hutch when he comes back, but at least, like, it kind of puts that pressure on Aleem's shoulders that now, you're the main guy. You're as our de as you go, our defense will go. So hopefully he can handle that. I haven't seen anything to show that he couldn't. Little
So
extra pressure, probably a good thing.
every week I ask a question to the Pride of Detroit readers. Sometimes it's like who's going to win the game. Sometimes it's a variety of different things, whatever it is. This week I asked, with Aiden gone, who's the most important defender on the team? And I gave five options. Aleem was the first one. The second one was Alex Anzalone. Third one was Carlton Davis. And then I picked both Brian Branch. And then the fifth one was Kirby Joseph. So of those five, I take it you're siding with Aleem,
Oh,
probably. That's
certainly.
where you would
You
have
know me.
voted, right?
It's always linemen, always in the trenches.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. I haven't got the results back on it yet. I'm hoping they typically come out like either Thursday or Friday, but I haven't got them back yet. So look for that if you're interested in finding out what the consensus was. I think it'd be probably out no later than Saturday morning, because it's an interesting question, because I'm very interested to see where the majority of fans like are going to put like the responsibility of being like the next guy, right? And so we'll see how that goes. I'm looking forward to getting that response. So I'll have that up at Pride of Detroit over the weekend.
All right, let's move into the injury report, headlined by center Frank Ragnow. Everything's back to normal. Frank Ragnow is now weekly on our injury report. Rest, did not practice Thursday, did Wednesday, full practice Thursday.
Yeah, that was just a maintenance thing. His pec is no longer even on the injury report at all. Remarkable that he has a torn pec and or partially torn pec and couple weeks off and he's good to go. He's a freak.
He's crazy. Maybe he just doesn't feel pain. There's some people like that. There's
Knows, right?
more crazy versions of it, but maybe he's a version of it. All right, right guard Kevin Zeitler. This is a new one. Groin injury. Did not practice Wednesday. Limited on Thursday.
So there's a little qualifier here. On Wednesday, he didn't practice, but it was listed as rest as well. So he was expected just to be resting, just like Frank. But on Thursday, he was limited, and that's when the groin injury gets added on. So the question that we don't know is, was he resting because he had a minor groin injury that they thought would go away? And it didn't. And that's why the groin injury gets added. And that's why he was limited. Or did he rest and then come back and injure his groin and he wasn't able to finish practice? Because the outcome for those are two very different things. If it is he's just the day of rest didn't do enough, good chance he practices tomorrow and then is able to play in the game. If it is hey, he pulled his groin in Thursday's practice and couldn't finish it, well, we've talked about this all the time. Midweek injuries are often hard to overcome in time for a game. And so if he pulled his groin on Thursday, it's a chance he might not be ready to go. And if that's the case, now you have to shuffle your offensive line around a little bit. And you got to be a little more creative in how you approach this game. So we'll know everything on Friday. 4 o'clock on Friday, the injury report does the designations will be had. We might even know ahead of time if he was there at practice based on media observations. But it could go either way at this point because we really have no information. So can't speculate. We just know it could either be a nothing burger or it could be he misses the week type of thing. And it's just unclear.
Offensive tackle Dan Skipper, ribs, did not practice Wednesday, full practice Thursday. He might have gotten injured while lining up at wide receiver.
Yeah, he played 11 snaps, one at receiver, 10 on the line. But yeah, he should be okay. Like that pattern of practice is usually an indicator here that he's in good spot.
They weren't good. No way he was going to throw to him. I think that was just to confuse everybody.
Probably. I mean, if you get him on a corner who's, like 5'8 or 5'10. And he's 6'10", and you have that whole foot advantage plus the
No.
wingspan. I mean, It'd be fun to try it,
Well, it'd
but
be interesting. The corner definitely, I would say, definitely jumps higher than Skipper. Although,
oh
well,
yeah,
no, Skipper was a baseball star, right? Was he also a basketball star in high school?
I mean,
Yeah.
at 6'10", I assume he played. He would have been. He probably would. I don't know how good he was or anything, but I assume he was.
I would assume if he played
Yeah.
high school, he was probably good. He plays in the NFL, so very likely he was a good basketball player in high school.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
All right, cornerback Carlton Davis, quad injury, did not practice on Wednesday or Thursday.
So Dan Campbell said he expected him to play and he would be a bit surprised if he didn't, but he also said they had to leave the door open because they're, just in case things didn't go the way they were expecting. Said he would know more after Thursday's practice. So now here we are. But we haven't talked to Dan. We'll talk to Dan on Friday morning and we'll get an update on him then. So you have to, if you take what Dan said at face value, it sounds like even though he didn't practice, they're expecting him to practice Friday and then be ready to go for Sunday's game. If he doesn't go, now you're trying to figure out is it Kendall Vildor or are you putting Ennis Rakestraw out there? And I think depending on what your strategy is for Jefferson, one or the it depend, it would dictate which one or the other might be more beneficial.
Safety, Brian Branch, knee injury, limited on Wednesday, full practice Thursday.
Yeah, it's that pattern says he's in good spot, so he should be all right.
Offensive lineman Christian Mahogany on the NFI list with mono, still in the evaluation window.
Yeah, I expect him to be listed as out and then do the evaluation window all next week as well. Probably be listed out next week, and then they'll make a decision after that. So he's still got a handful of practices left to prove that he's, developed enough to be ready to go. We'll find out, in about 10 days, I think we'll find out.
All right, rolling into the Cowboys game. Once again, a 47-9 shellacking. There's not going to be much to say about on offense. Everything the Lions wanted to do, they were able to do. On
Yeah.
defense, they were able to stop whatever they wanted to stop. I guess we'll start offensively. Bunch of big plays. Got to run a bunch of trick plays, and Tom Brady very concerned about the number of trick plays used in the game that they have shown. The NFL, the rest of the teams, too many trick plays, but I don't know, that Ben Johnson's probably got a lot more trick plays to roll out there.
That's what he told people today. He said, yeah, don't worry about it. I've got lots in the bucket. And if you think that I'm ever going to run out, it's important to remember that you can just build layers on trick plays that have already worked. You can just add another layer to it to make it even more unpredictable. So every trick play you've seen him run, he might run again with a twist. And so, because he knows that he can get them to work. So, yeah, I think he has a plethora of plays just sitting in his bank, just waiting to be unleashed whenever he feels like he wants to get them done.
In the end, I'm a little bit surprised with how much they wanted to destroy this Cowboys team, how personally they took this game.
Yeah. It certainly comes off that way, right?
Especially when I hate to, it's the referees they would be upset
Sure.
with, not the Cowboys.
No, but I think the Cowboys have had their number, right? I think it's very
Well,
much
certainly
like,
true. Six in a row,
yeah.
right?
It's very, this was very much like Seattle, where it was, we don't want to beat you. We want to beat you up and win by double digits because we want to show that, you're not a problem for us anymore. And they want to make statements. I think this group of games that they have, with Seattle and then the bye week and then Dallas, I think those and then Minnesota this week, I think this little trifecta of games was like a period of their schedule that they were, preparing for ahead of time and saying we really want to get some revenge in these games and come out on top. So, I do think it was personal. They could do whatever, I mean, and realistically, yes, they could do whatever they wanted. And there's people that are mad that they just were running trick plays with up 30, but you know what? I don't care.
They were making no, it's different. If it's one thing if it's in college and one team's beating up on another, that's like in poor taste. In the NFL, everybody's getting paid out there. And they're all NFL caliber players. The Cowboys were 3-2. They're not a bad team. It's not like they're some team that it's like, well, we're punting on this season and we're just gonna put the young guys out there, or that would probably be in a little bit of bad taste, but I don't see any problem with it. Go ahead and do it. Stop it on the other side.
Exactly. Like exactly. If you don't like it, stop them. We've been on the wrong end of that before. You know, like we've seen it. Yeah. So,
Everybody's coming down on the Lions.
yeah.
This has
Who
happened to
cares?
them for decades.
Yeah. So I don't care at all. And look, I think the general consensus from former players that are now like either on social media or analysts on TV or something like that, all the former players were all like, good, it's fine, let it go. It's if you don't like it, stop it. Exactly what you just said there. So I don't think the players had an issue with it. And most of the tears that you hear are coming from, you know, like more people who like to be shocking for the sake of being shocking, or maybe people who were upset, like, you know, because their team got smacked, or you know,
Or
or
they
maybe you own,
threatened to get a
maybe you
radio
own the
host
team.
fired.
What a, like they have broke him. He has had a couple of tirades. This Jerry Jones has had a couple of tirades this week that make him look a little bit unhinged. And I'm here for that as well,
It's
because
fun. It's fun. Keep it up, Jerry.
yeah,
Makes football more exciting.
anytime you can make a billionaire look foolish, I'm here for that. You know, they got a lot of stuff going well for them. They can entertain me with their misery a little bit once in a while as well. But yeah, look, everything worked. They did what they wanted to execute a similar game plan that they've executed all year, which is run the ball down your throat right off the bat and establish a dominance and say, we can do this to you whenever we want. And then they just started, you know, uncorking the ball. The offensive line was immaculate.
Absolutely dominant.
Oh, it was
All the
unbelievable.
videos you see on, I mean, when you watch the game, every video that they play online during the week where they're breaking down a play, it's all, the Lions offensive line has the Cowboys defense 3 yards downfield, 5 yards downfield. I
Yeah.
mean, that's why they were so successful on offense. The offensive line played great.
And they're going to need it. They're going to need to keep doing that. And this week, they're going to need that physicality in order to disrupt what the Vikings do as well. And so, yeah, it starts with the offensive line. And when they are playing as well as they did, Jared Goff has time to cook. And then weapons on top of weapons on top of weapons that they've been, compiling for a couple of years now. It's really hard to beat them because, as Flores said this week, Brian Flores, the Vikings defensive coordinator, Lions don't really have a weakness on offense. There's not like one spot where it's like, oh, we can take that guy out and then the whole house of cards comes down. Like Tim Patrick is maybe the weakest person on the Lions, like weakest spot. They don't expect much out of him, and he's playing above his pay grade anyways. Like he's playing better than expectations were anyway. Like they really don't have weaknesses on offense right now. And if your defense is built to stop a tight end, they'll just cut you up with Amon-Ra. And if your defense is built to take away the slot, they'll just go deep to JMO, or they'll run it down your throat with the backs. Like they have an answer for every single defense in the NFL right now. And they can just go to a different guy to beat whatever defensive scheme is out there. And I know the Vikings are unique, but the Vikings are also vulnerable as well, despite their 5-0 record. So it was a fun game to watch, and I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch. The Hutchinson news awfully was, of course, deflating,
Sure, that's the curse. Something bad had to happen. It's a wonderful game. It had to
but
be
the rest
ruined.
of it was certainly one of the more fun games we've watched in a long time, right? It's been a long time since they've had a game this successful.
Right, more than a decade. We looked it up. We probably don't want to dig into that. That was
Well,
our fun
people,
before the show started.
but let's recap it. People might be
Oh,
interested.
boy.
No, so they won by 38. The biggest margin of victory they've ever had was 45 points. That was over the Chiefs in 2011. That was the game when we determined that was when Jamal Charles tore his ACL and couldn't finish the game. The Kansas City's whole offense was built around Jamal Charles, and Lions took care of business. They also won a 2000.
Ten.
Yeah, was it 10 game? Yeah, that was
Yep,
by
gets the
38
Rams.
points. Yep, and then everything else beyond that is, he had a couple games in the 90s that were good. Most of the games were in the glory years of this franchise in like the 50s and the 30s and stuff like that when they were, more dominating. And so, yeah, 45. This is going down as one of the top 10 biggest margins of victory in Detroit Lions history, and probably, or statistically, one of the three biggest wins in the last 30 years. So, a lot of fun.
As we walk out of the off, we loved how much the offense played. It is worth noting Dallas was shorthanded on defense going into the game, missing starting defensive ends, just like the Lions will. So
Sure.
we'll see how the Lions react to that. All right, flipping over to the other side of the ball. Defense was dominating. They were able to stop the run early. There was that tip pass, that second throw, I think it was by Prescott, that Lamb ended up with. It's like, oh no, it's
Oh
going to be one of those games. Like this, they're going to have this stuff happen for them. We're playing good defense. But that's not what happened. Lions were able to hold. Lions were able to get turnovers early on, get to a big lead in the second quarter, and then just be able to pin their ears back and rush Prescott because they weren't going to run the ball anyways. It's a good blueprint for what they'd want to do against Minnesota. And we talked about it a little bit, leading up to the Hutchinson injury. They were playing very vanilla on defense and it was working great. It was all man coverage. All rushing four, not a ton of blitzing. It was probably a little bit, but then once Hutchinson went out, they started doing a lot of different things. We saw a little bit of zone. We saw more blitzing from the second level and all that. And I'm assuming that's what we're going to see on this Sunday.
A lot of crowding the line to indicate blitz and then dropping out. A lot of pressure on the A gap with your linebackers, which is very much a Mike Zimmer move, which is funny because Mike Zimmer was on the other sideline. And you ran stunts with defensive tackles, you ran stunts with linebackers clearing way for defensive tackles. Aleem's sack was actually a stunt with Malcolm Rodriguez, where Rodriguez crashed down and took out the guard. Center then turned to block Malcolm, and Aleem dipped around him and then got the sack. And so there's lots of variations that they can do, and they're going to need to do that. They're going to need that interior pressure. They're going to need that blitz in the A gap. They're going to need to blitz the edges with their defensive backs, and they're going to need stunts. They're going to need all kinds of different things in order to be creative. When you can execute those things like they did against Dallas, you can make up for, the loss, right? Like, you're never ever going to get it fully back. Like, you're never going to ever accomplish what Aiden was doing, but you can still be very, very good in creating pressure and finding ways to disrupt the offense beyond just a traditional, let's bend a guy around the edge and see if he can get home. Like, Lions are going to have to, they'll get creative in how they create that pressure.
Great game by Brian Branch. A pair of interceptions. The first one was fantastic. Well, they were great. The Kirby Joseph, another pick himself. A couple of fumbles. Brian Branch with the peanut punch, right? Jalen
Defensive.
Reeves-Maybin also forced fumbled.
I was going to say Brian
Big
Branch,
old overrun
defensive player
of the
of the week.
week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything else to say, but like
No,
everything went
I
right. Punting game was
yeah.
terrible. We didn't see or great. I don't know where you sit on that. They don't punt once. Is it a bad punting day? It's a good punting day because they didn't have to use
One of my favorite parts of the fallout from that game was the Lions' social media accounts trolling the Cowboys, and like kind of throwing some stuff back at them, kind of making fun of some analysts like they like to do. And they did a Jack Fox highlight reel. I don't know if you happen to catch
Yeah,
that.
I saw it.
It was
Yep.
just him holding, which
Yeah,
was
well,
very humorous.
yeah, it's good.
I enjoyed that. Yeah, but I think we covered, a lot of what we probably needed to for that game.
Right.
I think most people's attention is on the Vikings, and so we'll probably
Yeah.
shift to that.
All right. Minnesota Vikings, Lions not favored in this game. Vikings favored by 1.5. Games at Sunday at 1 p.m. at Bank of America Stadium in Minneapolis. I think it's Minneapolis.
Oh.
It might be in St. Paul. I'm betting it's in Minneapolis.
I don't remember.
Fox broadcast Adam Amon, Greg Olson, and Pam Oliver is going to be down on the field. The referee is Clay Barton, his 10th year in the NFL, 7th as a ref, 12.2 penalties per game. So a little bit below average.
US Bank Stadium.
U.S. Bank Stadium. Yeah, that was running through my head. Bank of America Stadium is the Panthers.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, so the line was 1.5, and then it went to 2.5, and then it's back down to 1.5. I think you might even be able to find 2.5 at some different betting sites, but the one that we use at Pride of Detroit is 1.5, so that's what we stick with. I think it's a tougher game. Being in their house, the counterpart to this game will be when it's in at Ford Field is going to be Week 18, which is should be very exciting to have that game in Ford Field. I tell you, I'd much rather have the home game in Week 18 than Week 7, that's for sure.
Sure.
But I know there's like a is. If you want to talk curses, isn't there like a Greg Olsen curse? Like, don't they not win when Greg Olsen calls the game or something like that?
Who's
I don't
they, the
know.
Vikings or the Lions?
No, the Lions. I thought the Lions
Right,
didn't
NFC
win.
Championship game last year, sure.
Okay.
I
I
can't
don't.
remember what games they did during the season last. I mean,
Yeah.
they lose, so it would, yeah, well. I can't remember if they were on CBS or Fox on Thanksgiving.
Okay.
If they were on Fox, that would have been Greg Olson again. That Cowboys game, that was Sunday Night Football, or was that a 4 o'clock
No,
start?
that was Sunday Night Football.
No, Sunday Night Football. So he didn't do that one. There's the Baltimore game. Did they do that Baltimore game?
Oh boy, they might
They
have.
might
That
have
might
done
be
that
a.
Chicago game because that might have been an outlier too.
I
It's like,
seem to
why would they have done
remember.
that game?
Yeah, I seem to remember people telling me that Greg Olsen was like bad news
I
because
buy it.
I think Greg Olsen's a very good analyst. He's one of the better ones, in my opinion, and
Yeah,
so.
yeah. He got demoted.
Yeah.
It's not because he was doing a bad job.
No, he got demoted because the owner of the one of
Part
the
owner
owners
of
of the
the Las
Raider,
Vegas Raiders
yeah,
wants to be an
decided that he
announcer.
wanted. Yeah, even though have you seen the parameters on that side note here,
Yeah, oh yeah.
like how
It's
he's not
exciting.
allowed to do like most of what he's needs to do his job, but whatever, it's fine. You're paying him for his football knowledge, not for his knowledge of other things. So anyway, I like Greg Olson. I hope he does a good job. I hope there's no curse. I don't, like I said, I don't recall what it was, but I know there's some people out there that are probably yelling right now saying, that know exactly what we're talking about and are very unhappy that Greg Olson's on the call. But
But there are other people out there that are very unhappy listening to this, having us talking about curses. the whole time, because then we could get into a whole Vikings curse. Like, people don't like that talk either. We're screwed either way, Eric.
Well, I mean, I didn't know what else to call it. But I know there's people that don't like when Greg Olsen's on the call because they didn't win a few games, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
All right.
So there's four teams in the NFL with one loss or less, two in the AFC,
There are
two in
two
the
of them.
NFC. Yeah. And so this game with the Vikings 5-0, Lions 4-1, not only has NFC North implications, but NFC implications overall. Like the team who wins this game is at sitting atop the NFC. And it's a pretty spot to be in. And if the Vikings are for real and they're going to be there at the end, you're going to want to have as many advantages over them as possible. And yes, you play two games, but if you can win those two games, then that's a massive advantage when it comes to tiebreakers and whatnot. So, it's an important game for so many reasons. And I think the Vikings playing well, being at home, coming off their bye, expectations are high for the Vikings to do well in this game. I'm not so sure. I think they can be a scary team. At the same time, I think there's ways to beat them.
All right. They've beaten the Giants, beaten the 49ers, but that's been an injury decimated 49ers team. Destroyed the Texans, who've looked very good as of late.
Yeah,
Defeated
that
the
was a bit
Packers, and that
surprising.
was at that Lambeau, and then beat the AFC juggernaut that is the New York Jets. And then they rolled into their bye week. So there's some very nice victories. You'd want to look, it's like, oh, they haven't played anybody. It's like, no, they've played a few teams there.
Yeah, I agree. I think they caught the 49ers at the right time. The win over the Texans, very impressive. Did not expect that. Jordan Love was coming off of his injury in the Packers game. The Vikings had a multi-score lead, and then going into the half, and then just kind of fell apart offensively after that. And the Packers almost came back. It's very interesting when you look at the last like six quarters of offensive football from the Vikings, which would be the back half of the Packers game plus the Jets game. They've only scored one offensive touchdown during those six quarters. Defense has really been the hero. Defense has scored twice during that time. And so defenses, I think when you start looking at this team overall, you'll notice it's really the defense that's putting them in situations to be successful. The offense has taken advantage of opportunities, but they're also not the juggernaut that they look like on paper, right? Like when you look at the scores and you look at like the touchdowns, they look like an awfully impressive team. But when you start looking a little bit closer and you start peeling back the onion, you start to see that their running game has improved, but it's still in the bottom 10 of the NFL. Their passing game went from number one in the NFL to like now like middle of the pack. The only area that they're really high in production is touchdowns. And those touchdowns are mostly because the defense is getting turnovers and putting them in a spot where they have a short field or they're right outside the end zone. And so then the offense takes advantage of that, which again, credit to them for doing that. But these are not like 80-yard sustaining, time sustaining drives that require, 12, 13 plays. This is them taking advantage of what their defense is giving them. And it's not as dynamic of an offense, I think, as they appear. The defense is certainly dynamic, and we'll get into more details on that. But the defense is really carrying this team. So offensively, not terribly concerned about them. Defensively, obviously, there's a lot to worry about from a Lions perspective.
DVOA rankings, as you mentioned, Vikings are number one on defense. Overall, the Lions are number two, Vikings are number one. Vikings overall in defense, number one, as well as number one against the run and number one against the pass. Lions offense is number three, 12th best passing game, second best run game. No surprises there. On flipping the team's positions, Lions defense is fourth overall, fifth against the pass, 10th against the run. That seems wrong. Vikings offense, I know it's efficiency rankings, so it's not necessarily.
It's Seattle, the Seattle game when.
That's right. Yeah, because they had like 180 yards rushing.
It was like five runs for like 80 yards that really killed them. And so I think as you add more games, their run defense is going to get better statistically. Yeah, it's really just like those five runs from Kenneth Walker that really have dropped them. If you take like those five runs away, they would be in the top three.
Offensively, as you mentioned, Vikings in the middle of the pack at number 18, seventh throwing the ball and 20th running the ball. Let's talk about you want to talk about Kevin O'Connell and the coaching staff? I don't know if there's anything.
This is the first time that the Lions are facing a team that did not make a change to their head coach or coordinator positions. So these are the same guys that they saw last year twice. And this is so you're going to have the same basic scheme with some slight tweaks, just like the Lions scheme is getting tweaked every offseason. Minnesota's making, finessing theirs as well. But it's pretty much the same guys. So there shouldn't be any surprises. And because, like I said, they're a division opponent, you've already faced them twice in the last 10 months. So that's it. It's Kevin O'Connell's team. He's the head coach, but he's also the offensive play caller. Wes Phillips is a guy who's been with him since their days in Washington. And he's, he went with him to the Rams and then to Minnesota. But he kind of defaults to O'Connell, who organizes and executes the offense. Flores and O'Connell go back, a ways as well with their relationship. Flores was a coach in 2008 with the Patriots when O'Connell was drafted there. And Flores has developed his defense into this juggernaut that is very difficult to predict. And they present a variety of different, alternatives on what they can do depending on what they show you pre-snap, right? So maybe I'll hold on that till we get to the defense. But let's talk about the offense, and then when we shift to the defense, let's talk a little bit more about scheme when we get there.
All right. Let's talk about the Vikings depth chart, starting with the quarterback position. Starter is going to be Sam Darnold, supposed to be J.J. McCarthy, but we talked about that weeks ago, and I'm sure everybody listening is well aware about McCarthy's season-ending injury. Nick Mullins, Brent Rippon off the bench. Darnold has been shockingly competent this season.
Yeah, he's got a good passer rating. Statistics haven't been out of the ballpark because – again, he's been put in favorable positions. I also think, though, he's kind of leveled off over the last game and a half. Last six quarters, he has not looked like the guy he looked like the first three games. And so, my kind of stance on Darnold is that water will find its level. And maybe it's finding its level now. Maybe it's not. Maybe he's going to come out of the bye, ready to go and slinging that ball around. But in my opinion, he is a average starter who's taking care of his opportunities and he's finding success with them. But I know I'm in the minority when I say that. I know that there is a lot of people that are very impressed with the turnaround that he's had, and that think he's very much in the mix for like Pro Bowl contention and maybe even more.
Tyler Huntley was a Pro Bowl quarterback at one time, so anything's possible.
Right. But there's things about him that I think eventually will dissipate. And a lot of these players on the Vikings are average to above average, and there's a lot of them. But I think this team lacks superstars, except for a couple of guys that are like really, really superstars, like big time superstars. But the majority of their starters are just kind of like average to above average guys. But there's a lot of them, and they have layers and depth, and that's what they're doing well. And for me, Darnold is, he's just another one of those layered guys that is finding, making the best of the situation that he's in right now. And credit to him. It'll be interesting to see which Sam Darnold the Lions see, come Sunday.
All right, running backs. Aaron Jones, he's questionable this week. Aaron Jones, he's been up and down this season. He's looked good in several games, and in the games he's looked bad, he was in my starting lineup in one of my fantasy teams. Backups are Ty Chandler, Myles Gaskin, and the recently acquired Cam Akers.
So when Aaron Jones is healthy, they try to get him the ball about 80% of offensive snaps. Like, he's out there all the time. When he's and so then Chandler gets the ball like 15 to 20%, and then maybe Myles Gaskin gets on the field, maybe not. When Jones got injured last game, Ty Chandler's role increases. So he's the guy that they turned to when Jones was not able to go. Now, Jones is very much on the fence. He returned to practice on Thursday, but even then he was limited, and there's a lot of people that are still very skeptical that he'll be ready. There's a good chance, because he's practicing, that he's able to give it a go. But if he's not, they would turn to Ty Chandler in that situation. And I think the drop off is pretty massive. Aaron Jones is sensational in a lot of different areas. A terrific pass catcher, good runner, runs between the tackles. He can run outside. Good instincts, good just ability to contribute in the passing game and third downs. Like, Aaron Jones can do so much. He's a terrific back. And Ty Chandler is more of a backup. Like, they don't have the two-headed monster like Detroit does. Like, they have one guy who's very clearly a starter, and then they have a couple of backups. And we'll see what ends up happening with Aaron Jones, but I think the Lions would consider themselves incredibly lucky if Jones was not able to play, because he definitely makes the offense significantly different when he's available and when he's not. When he's available, they can run, they can be balanced. They never have to move away from the run. They can stay at it regardless of what the score is. If he's not in the game, they are going to be more inclined to shift away from the run and stick to the passing game more, similarly to what they did last year. So Jones's injury status is a very important one to watch.
It'll be interesting how much of Cam Akers they'll use. The trade only went through 2 days ago. It's not like he had the bye week to learn the playbook or anything.
Right. Well, remember, he was with them, so he should have some familiarity. He was with them, what, 2 years ago? So could have some
We'll see.
familiarity with the terminology and whatnot.
Because I would say Akers is better than Chandler, but how extensively would he
I
be
can't
used if Jones
imagine
would
they're gonna.
start?
Yeah,
No,
exactly.
I'm just throwing it out there.
No, yeah, no, I'm with you.
Struggled against the Jets, the whole team, 30 carries, 82 yards, but helped them have a balanced offense, 30 runs, 32 passes. That's not bad. Wide receiver group, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, and Jalen Speedy Naylor from Michigan State University. Those are the three starters. Brandon Powell, Trent Sherfield Sr., and Tristan Jackson, also a former Michigan State Spartan, if I remember. He transferred. That's your wide receivers for the Vikings.
So Justin Jefferson is obviously one of, if not the best wide receiver in the NFL. He's a guy who the Lions have used bracket coverage on in the past. They'll run a corner underneath, a safety over the top. It's not something they run every play, but it's part of their design in order to try and limit his ability to be explosive downfield. So Jefferson's going to draw a lot of attention. He would, based on what we've seen in the past from the Lions, That would typically mean Carlton Davis would line up against him if Carlton Davis is healthy. If not, I do think they might. My guess is they would go with Kendall Vildor. They would want a veteran, in my opinion, out there against Jefferson, as opposed to a rookie who really hasn't had a lot of starting experience. And so, I do think Carlton is one of the, he's probably the biggest injury to track, in my opinion. Addison's an above average player. I think he's a really good wide receiver. He can there if he was on some other teams, he might even be like their wide receiver one. He's number two here in this case, but he gets a lot of opportunities. Typically runs out of the slot the majority of the time. That leaves Naylor as the speedy kind of Y option. And he will play more situationally, right? Like Jefferson's going to play like 90% of snaps. Addison's going to play like 75, 80% of snaps. Naylor will play sometimes 20% of the snaps, sometimes 50% of the snaps, depending on like what they want to do with their tight ends. If they want to run more tight end heavy, then Naylor's the guy that ends up kind of getting more limited in his snaps. If they want to stay three wide receivers wide, Naylor's opportunities are, of course, going to increase. They definitely lean on their reserves as well. Both Sherfield and Powell will find the field, and it won't necessarily just be because they're going like four or five wide. It's going to be because they'll work them in to that wide receiver three spot, depending on the type of play call that they want to execute. So they use five of those guys pretty consistently. But like you mentioned at the top, the Jefferson, Addison, Naylor trio is their preferred starter.
Interesting numbers on those three. Addison is averaging the fewest yards per reception at 15.9, with Naylor at 17.1, Jefferson at 17.3. So very downfield passing game when it goes to the wide receivers. So they interesting wrinkle. You don't see that on a lot of teams. Instead of mention it. All right. Tight ends. Josh Oliver, Johnny Munt, with TJ Hockenson being out and Nick Muse on IR. What a trade that thing that's looking like in the rear view mirror. Get rid of Hockenson when they did.
Hockenson has been practice. He's in evaluation window. He's been practicing this week, limited practices both days. Expectations are he is not going to play. He'll return a little bit further down the road. I think that's probably for the best for the Lions,
Well,
right?
sure. Yeah, that makes their
Yeah.
offense a lot more
Yeah, dynamic, certainly.
dynamic.
Yeah.
He had a great year last. I should mention that with Hockenson, 95 receptions, 960 yards. So yeah, he would step in and be a big difference maker for the Vikings.
They kind of split things relatively even with between Oliver and Munt. You're talking like 50, 60, 65 snaps or percentage of offensive snaps between those two guys. So they'll alternate between them. They'll put them both on the field at the same time. Like they're creative with using those two guys. Robert Tonyan was tight end three, but they had to clear. They cut Robert Tonyan to make room for Akers, re-signed Tonyan to their practice squad. So Tonyan could potentially be like an elevation, be someone to watch out for because I don't know how comfortable they are with just two tight ends. And if they want a third, keep an eye on that an hour and a half before the game starts because I wouldn't be surprised to see, or maybe even like the day before, that see Tonyan get an elevation.
Vikings actually use a fullback, don't forget, and that's CJ Ham.
Yeah, I think Ham's more impactful than either of the tight ends, to be honest. The tight ends are just kind of what they are. Ham can be an interesting player that they can use like as a running back. They also use as lead blocker. That certainly helps Aaron Jones. But I think if I'm not mistaken, their one touchdown is a CJ Ham touchdown. The one touchdown that I was talking about over the last six quarters. I believe that was a CJ Ham touchdown. If
Yeah, it
not,
sure
okay.
against the Jets.
So they'll utilize him. He gets on the field like 25, 30% of the time. And but they're not scared to give him the ball.
Offensive line left to right, Christian Darrisaw, Blake Brandel, Garrett Bradbury, Ed Ingram, and Brian O'Neill.
So their bookends offensive tackles are really where the talent lies in this offensive line. They've invested pretty heavily in those guys. Second round pick for Brian O'Neill a few years back, first round pick for Darrisaw. And they're playing well. Darrisaw is a guy who I think, he's not quite at he's not at Penei's level. I don't think many people are at Penei's level. But like he's a guy that's in like a tier or two below Penei, right? Which probably puts him in the top, I don't know, 10, 12 offensive tackles in the game. Maybe 12, top 12, top 15, right? So he's a growing talent, and he's going to be a difficult player to deal with. And I think O'Neal's steady. He's a good veteran, and I think he could be potentially problematic as well. So your edge rushers, no matter who it is that you put out there, they're going to have a tough row against the tackles of the Vikings. On the inside, they're not as good. Brandel is a lower tier starter. Ingram, I don't think, has played as well as they would have hoped. Bradbury started out the first couple of years of his career, really playing at a really good level. Has tapered off over the last several years, and he's more average at this point. But the three of them are really the key to gaining pressures, right? Because we talked earlier about how the Lions are going to have to stunt, they're going to have to blitz the A gaps, they're going to have to use creativity, and that's going to put pressure on their interior guys. So if the Lions' defensive interior can get the better of the Vikings interior offensive line, then that's how you disrupt, right? Like you're going to ask your edge setters or your edge rushers to be edge setters and to try and create, some contain and some pressure, and then you're going to dip and dodge and use the blitz, but most of that pressure is going to come up the middle, in my opinion. And that again, this is what you want if you're the Lions. If you want to shift the focus to Aleem, you want Aleem to be successful. You want to go up against an offensive line where the interior part is the weak part. And so, yeah, that's like I think where they're at, right? Like
Right.
it's a fortunate matchup for the Lions, considering what I think they want to do with how they adjust without Aiden.
Man, it's so weird. This is the first week where you don't talk about Aiden Hutchinson's matchup against which tackle.
Yeah, it's
Feels
gonna
like a
be
whole part
weird.
of the podcast has been just cut out.
Yeah, certainly does.
Right, flipping over to the Vikings defense.
Okay.
You wanted to speak a little bit more on the
Just
coaches, or let's go through the players and then you'll insert the coaches as we go.
let me just do like a quick kind of
All right,
overview,
yeah,
just so
let's
we
do it.
know.
Yeah.
So they run like a modified 3-4, right? But three down linemen, three linebackers, but they vary it. Sometimes a lot of the time they're just going to put two down defensive linemen and then have like their two stand up edge rushers and then a variety of linebackers, or maybe they'll add defensive backs. They do a lot. They like to add a lot of defensive secondary players. But the defensive, like pure defensive linemen, they don't play like three big guys like you would see in a normal like 3-4. It's more like two big guys. And when you right off the bat, they're giving up a size advantage to the Lions offensive line. So the way they counter that is they bring everybody up to the line. Some like 65 or I'm trying to remember the exact number, but they're one of the most I don't want to say
Oh
okay.
boy.
They're one of the most they're one of the teams that run the six guys on the line more than like anybody else, right? And so like they will come up with six guys and they'll say, okay, you've got your five offensive linemen, that now you have to keep a guy in because we're going to put six on the line and we're going to threaten, right? We're going to threaten that we're going to blitz, or sometimes we're going to bring all six, sometimes we're going to bring four and drop,
and you don't know which ones they are.
Exactly. And sometimes you're going to bring three and drop three. And so that's really where the trick is. So the production comes not as much from the talent of the guys up front, but more in the disguise of how they work up front. So when you have these six guys, and sometimes it's like the four guys that they rush will all be like on the right side of the line. Like there's no rhyme or reason to why who they're going to bring. Like they try purposefully to be unpredictable. And so you have to be able to adjust for that. The offensive line has to communicate. The pass protection has to be on point, and you have to be prepared for that. In the secondary, they're going to play a ton of zone. All right. So you're going to need your wide receivers to be able to get in and out of zones quickly, settle down in zones, and create open targets as fast as possible. They will run a lot of cover two and a lot of like cover four. In both situations, it means they're going to have two high safeties, and not even safeties necessarily. It could be, you're going to have two high defensive backs, because sometimes they will show one look with like a safety and single high, but it really, then they'll roll a corner back and they'll have two high and one to be a corner, one to be a safety. Sometimes it's both safety. Sometimes it's defensive backs. The majority of the time, they have two defensive backs high. They do that because they don't want to get beat deep, and they try to make it even. They try to clutter up the passing lanes and make things even more confusing. But with a line that's undersized, and two of your defensive backs are almost always playing deep, you become a little bit susceptible to the run. Now, they try and stack their guys up front so that if you do run, they're closer and can react to it quicker. But they will also, you know, if they start creeping those guys up into the box, then you're going to have more openings in the secondary then, right? So, like, they can't cover everything. They can't cover the run by overloading the run and then without giving up space in behind them. They can't cover up the space in behind them without leaving the front a little bit lighter than maybe they want. And so the Lions are going to have to do some things very specifically in order to gain an advantage. And it starts with being bullies. They're really going to have to do the things that they did against Dallas, which is lock in on your guy and run him into the ground. If they want to line six up, great. Get the tight end involved and just run six of, and just run them right at them, right? And run into the blitz. So there's ways to beat it. But what makes it so complicated is how everything is just disguised. You don't know where the blitz is coming from. You don't know where the coverages are. You don't know who's dropping. You don't know who's not. And so they want to keep you guessing. And the way that this has really worked over the first couple of games is because the Vikings have gotten out to really high, really big leads. And then it's allowed them to, you know, be more creative on defense because they've had the flexibility to, you know, with the big lead and with how they want to pass rush, they can do a lot of different things that make them unpredictable. If you start bullying them, and you start scoring points, and maybe you get a lead, you can start to turn the tables on them. And if you think back to the last two times that the Lions played the Vikings, they scored 30 points on them both times, right? Like in the last season and this season, so 17 plus the five games, so in the last 22 games since Flores has been a defensive coordinator for the Vikings, they've only allowed 30 or more points three times. But two of those times were against the Lions. And that is because the Lions have the secret sauce in the fact that they're bullies, and the fact that their run game is so effective, the fact that their offensive line is so productive and so efficient that they can get the run game going, and then that forces the defense to become a little bit more predictable. When they become predictable, then you start seeing that the talent is, again, like I said, it's an average kind of talent that finds success because of the scheme. If you make that scheme limited, you have better talent on offense than they do on defense, and it gives you another advantage. So the defense is going to look tricky. It's going to look unusual. They're going to do things that are going to test the Lions, and the Lions offense might be a little bit stagnant out the gate, but this is something that they can take advantage of if they execute properly. So when we go through these guys, it's, you know, we're going to label them by position and stuff like that, but it's not like traditional positions, right? Like, we're going to talk about the fact that they have three down linemen, but again, they only use two of those guys at a time, even though technically they have three starters. Those three starters don't all play, you know, more than 50, 60% of the snaps. Like, so it's a little bit different of a team, and we'll try and elaborate on how they bring different guys in different spots as we go through this list here.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to follow what the list shows, and you'll talk about where these guys really fit in. Starting three defensive linemen, Jerry Tillery, Harrison Phillips, Jonathan Bullard. They show Levi Drake, Rodriguez, Taki Taimani, and Pat Jones as the reserves. Pat Jones, who hasn't started a game this year, leads the Vikings in sacks with 5 in 5 games.
So for me, I would probably list Pat Jones not as a down lineman, but more of like an outside linebacker guy, right? So I would not put him in this group personally. I would look at the three defensive linemen as the three, the guys that you mentioned, Tillery, Phillips, Bullard. I think they each play around between 40 and 60% of snaps. And then you'll get the reserves in there for a handful of snaps here and there as well. But for the most part, those three guys are the guys that we have to pay attention to the most.
All right, moving on to edge rushers. So Jonathan Greenard and Andrew Van Ginkle have seen all the starts so far this season, but the aforementioned Pat Jones is certainly in this group. So is Dallas Turner. So is Jihad Ward.
So if you look at Greenard and Van Ginkle, they both play like 80-85% of snaps. That's a ton of snaps. But then a guy like Pat Jones, he plays around 50-60% of snaps. So that's a good example of how they'll shift to like one or two down linemen, and then they'll have like multiple edge rushers as opposed to just two, right? So you might have one down lineman and three edge rushers, or you might have two down linemen and three edge rushers, like depending on what their formation calls for. But they like to change things up with them and give you different looks. Ward, like you mentioned, he's also a guy that maybe, depending on scheme, you might classify him as a down defensive lineman. But in kind of how they use him, it's more like a stand-up kind of edge guy. Can use him as a down, but an edge is an edge in this league anymore. So Pat Jones is productive. Greenard, Van Ginkle, all those guys are highly productive. Van Ginkle's been off the charts lately, mostly because of his turnovers. I think he has two pick sixes. Least I can think of off my top of my head.
Nope, you're right.
And then, you know, so they have really good edge guys, and they use them in a variety of different ways. Now, again, these are probably above average edge guys, but neither of them are elite in what they do. So but the way that they get utilized, I think, accentuates where they're able to be productive, and it puts them in spots to be productive, and they, to their credit, they've definitely taken care of that. So these are the upgrades that they chose to make this offseason. Greenard, Van Ginkle, even Jerry Tillery, those were guys that they all targeted as schematic fits and then brought in over this past offseason. And so far, I think you're seeing a lot of production out of their decisions to bring these guys in.
All right, in the middle, Ivan Pace Jr. and Blake Cashman is the normal starter, but he is doubtful going into this weekend's game. On the bench, Brian Asamoah the second and Kamu Grugier-Hill.
Yeah, so Cashman typically plays every snap. And then that leaves Gruger Hill and Pace to get about, I don't know, 30 to 40 snaps each. It's not a ton for your second off-ball linebacker. Again, they prefer to go with an edge guy, or they prefer to go with a defensive back as opposed to sticking with two off-ball linebackers all the time. If you only have one dedicated off-the-ball linebacker available, and he's very productive in what he does, and now he can't play, well, now you've got to turn to a guy who's not as experienced to man the middle. And I think this is potentially one of the biggest blows to their run defense that they're going to have, because Cashman is a good run defender, and they don't have a starter capable, or they don't have a player capable of like just filling in us at a starter level and then producing at the level that he did. So now all of a sudden they got a big weak spot in the middle of their defense, and makes them very susceptible to the run, in my opinion. And hopefully it's something that the Lions can take advantage of, because Cashman's been great. He's another guy that was a targeted offseason acquisition that's been playing at a high level. He's not necessarily an elite player, but he's really good system fit for them. And if with him almost assuredly not being available to play, it's going to be a big loss.
All
So yeah,
right,
I think Pace, I think Pace will probably start, but take his role, but I don't know for certain.
moving back to the defensive secondary, the corners, Stephen Gilmore and Byron Murphy Jr. have started all five games. Josh Metellus has seen a pair of starts. They also have Shaquille Griffin, Fabian Moreau, Akilab Evans, and Dwight McLothern.
So Gilmore was another offseason target. He plays almost every snap. An aging corner, but playing at a very good level in this system, I think is a
Still
good.
has an interception, five passes defensed in five games.
I think depending on who you're going to try and match him up with, he could have a harder time. If you put him on Tim Patrick, I think that's probably a good matchup for them. I think if you ask Stephen Gilmore to try and hang with JMO, I think that's problematic for them. Even putting Brian Murphy could be problematic for guarding JMO. I think they're going to have to really rely on their over-the-top safeties to kind of contain Jameson Williams' explosiveness, and then just keep one of their guys. I'm not sure which one, but they'll keep one of their guys and kind of like they're going to kind of have to like do like a shell coverage, like a brat, not necessarily like pure bracketed, but they're going to have to kind of bracket the coverage to account for JMO's speed, because they simply don't have it. They don't, it, as good as they are, it's a zone defense that doesn't have the speed that Jameson Williams has. So, potential advantage for the Lions in that situation. Metellus, though, is a unique player because of what he does. He is a slot corner. I think that's primarily where he's listed, but he can play deep safety. He can play off-ball linebacker. He can play on the edge at the line of scrimmage. He can threaten the edge. He can threaten the A-gap. He can do a whole variety of different things. He is kind of their jack of all trades player. So one of the reasons why you can go a little bit lighter with like Ivan Pace's and Gruger Hills is because you put Metellus at the linebacker level, and It just makes he's so position flexible that they can be productive, and he's a very productive player because of how they utilize him and his ability to line up all over the place. So he's not going to be like a pure one-on-one with like St. Brown. Like they're going to play their scheme, and they're going to not necessarily match up. They're just going to kind of hope that the zone and the disguise can take advantage of passing lanes. Last two times St. Brown faced them, he caught 12 passes in one game, 7 passes in the other. Both times he went for over 100 yards, and he scored in both games as well. They don't really have a good matchup for St. Brown. And he's instinctive enough that he can settle in the zone. Now, if they have to dedicate some brackets to JMO, you're going to have a harder time covering St. Brown. And if I'm the Vikings, and or if what I know about the Vikings is that they would rather give up an underneath catch and rely on their tackling skills than give up a deep threat to a speed guy who they can't, run with. So in their mind, I think they'd rather dedicate their coverage to JMO than to St. Brown, which is an opportunity for St. Brown to do well. And that's why I think why he's done well in the past is because they don't treat St. Brown as like a number one, like a lot of teams do. They're going to play their scheme and play the way that to play the defense that they want. And that means opportunities for a savvy route runner to find spots in the zone and then become an outlet for a quarterback that, loves to throw the ball his way. So interesting. Like I said, the secondary is average to slightly above average. Individually, as a whole, they're better. And Metellus is really that kind of position flexible guy that will work the slot or everywhere else.
All right, going back to the safeties, got Harrison Smith and Cameron Bynum. Now, between Gilmore, Smith, Bynum, Murphy, and Metellus, every guy who started a game in the Vikings secondary of the season does have at least one interception. As a team, they have 11 on the season and three forced fumbles. So that's 14 turnovers in 5 games. The defense has forced. Jay Ward and Theo Jackson are the reserves.
So Theo Jackson, Jay Ward, they're special teamers. They're not really necessarily contributors on defense. In my opinion, the starters are the guys like you kind of named off. Those are the guys they rely on. They're the ones that they hope can take care of business. You mentioned the turnovers. Part of the disguise is that you will drop guys into passing lanes that quarterbacks don't expect, and then you create opportunities for turnovers. And the Vikings, again, have capitalized. It's part of their why they've been able to produce and score as much as they have is because of turnovers. So for reference, they force 2.6 turnovers a game. The problem is that on offense, they give up 1.8 turnovers a game. So that averages out to a plus 0.8, which is good for seventh in the NFL. And that sounds, impressive, right? Like they 0.8, that's good. 2.6 turnovers, that's great. I think that might actually be tops in the NFL or in the top three. Here's the deal. The Lions are forcing two turnovers a game and they're only giving up 0.8. So they have a plus minus of 1.2, which is fourth best in the NFL. So the line is good. Everyone wants to talk about the Vikings being this like dynamic turnover savvy defense,
Machine.
which they are because they're getting 2.5 turnovers a game. But the problem is that their offense is giving up almost two turnovers a game. And so as good as their defense has been, it does get offset by their offense. Whereas like a team like the Lions, they've been pretty good with creating turnovers to a game, but their offense gives up less than one a game. And so that ends up being a plus minus advantage for the Lions. And I think this is going to be a key, right? A key, if you win the turnover battle, then you are going to one, put the Vikings in longer fields and make them travel longer, which is not something that they've had to do necessarily. You've also created more opportunities for yourself to have situations where you can score. And so far, the Lions have been doing that at a pretty high level. And I think it gets kind of dismissed because the Vikings they do it so well on defense, but everyone just kind of dismisses the fact that offensively they're turning the ball over quite a bit. So turnovers are going to be key in this game. And yes, their secondary produces them. Yes, their linebackers produce them, but Lions will have an opportunity to get those turnovers back as well.
All right, going over to special teams. Kicker is Will Reichard, the rookie out of Alabama. He has not missed a kick yet this season. 9 of 9 from field goals with a long of 58. Hit all 16 of his extra points. He's 24 of 29 kickoffs have gone for touchbacks.
Yep.
Point of
He's a guy.
strength.
He's a guy that I had kind of pegged if they were going to draft a guy. I thought he was one of, if not the best kicker in this class.
Punter is Ryan Wright, who's middling. He's averaging 46 yards per kick, although 11 of his 20 punts have been inside of the 20, so that's not bad. And limiting touchbacks. Only two of those 20 punts have been touchbacks. Return men, not very dangerous. Miles Gaskin has returned three kicks for 60 yards, 20-yard average. Brandon Powell, former Lion, is the punt returner. Seven returns for 36 yards. So nothing dangerous, not like Kevontae Turpin. And they ran that fake handoff. Like, did they ever hand that ball off? Like, why would you ever hand that ball off? If you go back to the Cowboys game, that's when referencing Turpin's returns.
Yeah, I think you should just I think all teams should do that because it creates suspense
I
and it
guess, yeah. Makes you
freezes the
stop, makes you think about it.
Yeah, it was clever. I think I would steal that if I was Dave Phipp.
Andrew DePaola is the long snapper. I don't know if you have any
No,
Andrew
I
DePaola
don't.
information.
No. I don't have anything on a long snapper this week. I feel like I'm like only every other week I'm finding something
Hey, that's better than we have been doing.
All
Right.
right.
That's it. We're ready to discuss who's going to win. You got the
So
win last week because I picked I picked the Lions to win, but I think it was a smaller margin than you had.
it was actually we had the exact same
Oh,
differential.
you had the Lions scoring more points. So you were 31-27, I was 28-24.
And so our tiebreaker that we excuse me, our tiebreaker that we did that we opted on was so if we ended up with the same point differential overall, then we would go to who was closest to the Lions point total. And so by that default, I end up getting the nod in this one. So we both were off by the same amount of points, but I was closer to the Lions overall score. So therefore I get the win here. Slight 3-2 advantage, but I'll take it. I need it. I could use it early, certainly. So that means I have to pick first. If the Lions hadn't scored 30 points each time they played the Vikings last season, I think I might be a little bit more worried. I do think they've upgraded their talent. And when you have the same type of scheme, but with better talent, you're going to have better efficiency. And they certainly have that. But for me, the difference in this game is really going to come down to a couple different things. First, the Lions offensive line is playing at such a high level. I just think they're going to be able to assert their will and disrupt the type of disguised behavior that the Vikings are going to want to put out there. So I think that's an advantage to the Lions. The other thing I believe is that I don't think the Vikings offense is as explosive as maybe they showed over the first couple of games. And I think if they don't have Aaron Jones, that's a potentially really big loss. So they would disrupt how they have to execute their offense. They may have to go into more They may have to go more, a little bit more pass heavy. If you go a little bit more pass heavy, allows the Lions to play better against a team that's one dimensional. So I think there's some keys that really favor the Lions. The Vikings are certainly a scary team. They're better than most gave them credit for. At the same time, I think it's a, I've been saying it all podcasts. It's a average to above average individual players who are playing better as a collective group based on the scheme. And if you can disrupt the scheme, you can get an advantage with better skill players. And I think the Lions offense matches up very well against this defense. And if they can figure that scheme out, I think they can put points up on the board. I'm not going to predict the Lions get all the way up to 30 again, but it's going to be close. I'm going with Lions 27, Vikings 23.
Oh, interesting. This game goes well for the Vikings if they can jump out to an early lead, right? If they can get up 14 to nothing, if they can get a 2-score lead, they're going to really be in business, because then they can pin their ears back and rush Goff and do all sorts of crazy things. And, you know, Goff can get forced into making bad throws. You know, he is at his best when they're running play action and the run game is dominant. So, I mean, the blueprint, of course, worked against the Cowboys. So it's easy for me to say if the Lions come out and stop the run early, they're in great shape. And that's true. You know, same thing. So offensively, that's the concern, that if they fall behind early, although they have the capability to come back, this is not a team that's done once they fall behind, but it makes it a whole lot harder than them on them. And on the other side of the ball, it's Lions got to stop the run. Stop the run, stop, and force Sam Darnold to win the game. Because although we have seen in ghosts of Lions past that they forced Sam Darnold to beat them in his first game ever as a pro, and he had no problem doing that on Monday night. That was Monday Night Football, right?
It was. It was.
Where he ate him alive as a rookie, and it's bizarre with how the way his career has gone since then. But it's a scary game for the Lions, because if they lose it, Vikings will be 6-0, Lions will be 4, they'll be 2 games behind in the division, and they'll be chasing the rest of the way. And as you point out, that's great, because they have the home game in Week 18 against them, and maybe the division gets settled there. Hopefully not. Hopefully the Lions win this week, and they end up being 5-1 alongside the Vikings. And, you know, I would feel, the way it looks on paper, that the Lions are the better team overall, even though they could potentially lose this game on Sunday, which I'm going to have them do. I'm going to have the Vikings winning 26-24. And gosh, I hope I'm wrong. A couple things might go that way, and it could be early on where they assert themselves. The Lions are playing catch up, and some untimely turnovers could do them in. And I hope I'm wrong.
Well, you know, they're favored in this game for a reason, right? They have a lot of advantages. They're a 5-0 team at home coming off their bye. Like, those are three big things that typically favor the home team. And then you add in the fact that I think a lot of people are very cautious because of the Hutchinson situation, and they don't know how the Lions are going to necessarily react. But I agree with you. On paper, the Lions have a better team. And so this is really going to come down to who can execute what they need to do better. And I see where you're coming from, and I understand why people will pick the Vikings. I just, I think it's a winnable game, and it's a big one. Like, I think they're going to go in with the right mindset.
This is a must. This is probably not a must win, but it feels like a must win.
Yeah, it certainly feels significant, right? Because after you get out of this game, you have the Titans, so you can get a little breather against a team that's not quite as good. And then you're back on the road against the Packers and Texans. So, like, this is a game that if you win, you really position yourself to be able to take control. Whereas if you lose, like you said, they're playing catch up. So I expect them to be focused. This is a team that when mentally they need to be prepared, they are. And They just got to prove it. They got to prove it in one more time here, and then prove it
then
again in
prove
two
it
weeks,
10 more 3 weeks.
Times
after that.
Yeah, 2 weeks, then 3 weeks later as well.
Yeah.
But this is a hard stretch. This is a hard stretch, and they have to continue to build on what they did in Dallas, because in Dallas, if the Dallas team shows, if the Lions team that was in Dallas shows up, they win this game. So that's
well,
the key.
Yeah, of course, that goes without
right.
saying. I would agree
right.
with you there 100%.
Well, that's what you got to hope, right? Like, you're hoping that's what you see.
All right, ratings wise, got a 5-star review from SK Weber, and it's very nice, great stuff. The first sentence says it all. You guys are so awesome, which I always believed about you, Eric. So SK Weber is just
Thank
solidifying
you, buddy.
My position on you. So great review from him. 5-star, appreciate it. Anybody else got 5-star reviews, put them up there. And
nice.
any type of review, we appreciate it. And Spotify's moved up a couple of reviews itself over the last week, so that's great.
Terrific. It's terrific. I'm both excited and nervous for this game, right?
Yeah, what's going to happen is going to happen. And if they lose, it's all going to be because Hutch got hurt. And we didn't immediately trade for Trey Hendrickson or Max Crosby or Myles Garrett or Hassan Reddick or Harold Landry. You know, you name the defensive end du jour.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know if you have an opinion. We didn't really talk about that too much.
No, and everybody's killing it or beating it to death.
Yes,
and
certainly.
I would love if they traded for one of those guys. It'd be great.
Sure. Sure.
And at the same time, like in my mind, it would be the headliner. It would be Max Crosby, Myles Garrett, right? At the same time, if you're Cleveland or Las Vegas, why do you want to trade them to the Lions, where you're going to get like two or even potentially three first round draft picks, which are basically second round draft picks, especially
Right.
once you trade the guy, they're going to be picking at the end of the draft for the next 3 years. Like, so, you know, I bet he is looking. I would hope that he's looking. I mean, that's his job as a general manager, is to make phone calls and test the waters. But at the same time, you know, I don't know how easily these other teams are going to part with these franchise players. You know, like, I don't know if the Lions have the ammunition to get these guys. So I don't know. I prefer if they got somebody because, yeah, it will help. But
yeah,
and I know a lot of people said, oh, well, this next man up. And Campbell has to say that because he has no control at this point. Like he's got to coach them up. So he's got to say, well, it's next man up. We'll be fine. Well, it's because he knows one of those guys isn't coming through the door. And don't forget, the trade deadline's the 5th. So these general managers can wait out the Lions and put more pressure on them, especially if the Lions like lose Sunday, lose next Sunday. Like, then it becomes like, well, maybe we do have to do something, and they maybe get more out of them. Go ahead.
No, I really think the key is, I don't think Brad Holmes is willing to part with much, right? Look at what we've seen from an extension standpoint. Seen Sewell, McNeil, you know, Amon-Ra all get extensions this offseason. That just shows you what he can do with the draft. If you were to give up, you know, a first, a third, and a fourth to go get one of those elite guys, you could be potentially giving up three pillars of your team. Like two first round picks is, you know, a huge, you know, it'd be a
commitment.
Huge. Yeah, exactly. It'd be a huge commitment because, like, you're basically giving up two players for one, right? You're giving up two players that you're going to have on rookie contracts for 5 years each for one elite edge rusher, potentially, right? And so I would hate to see first round picks go. And if you aren't going to get first round picks, boy, you're looking at rentals then, right? And I've gone out there and I've said my preferred option is to try and go get Za'Darius Smith. I think he'd be inexpensive to acquire, inexpensive to roster, and he can give you starter, you know, 50% of your starter snaps at one of the defensive end spots, and he stylistically plays the way you want. So I'm more of a, let's get a rental and see what we can do and just add some depth and let the depth, you know, work itself out.
Well, that's not a bad option. And I, you know, yeah, I mean, of course, the splashy move is to get one of those really high end guys. But yeah there are other guys out there potentially that they can make a move for. Remember when we saw Chase Young was a third round draft pick, you know, and albeit it didn't really work out great for the 49ers. He did make a nice play in the game against the Lions, but, you know, they still didn't win the Super Bowl, but they only got rid of a third round pick. So, yeah, if there's a move like that out there, or if it's for, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of all for all these moves. Because at the same time, you say, well, look at all these big contracts Holmes is handing out. It's like, yeah, okay, he's still going to find guys, even if he's missing those first-round draft picks. I don't know. I can go either way on it. You know, like, he could get rid of first-rounders because he's found guys in other places. And he's got a team. He's got a core of a team all set up. And I know they want to be smart, make this team good to great for years to come. And you'll do that by keeping first-round picks. But I don't know. They're in an interesting position right now.
Yeah. I've talked myself into a Za'Darius Smith type of move is what I would be happy with. But the reality is, if they somehow acquired Max Crosby, I would quickly talk myself into that. Yeah. Yeah. And I would just deal with it, you know, but I just think that's, I don't know if that's realistically an option. And maybe I'm, maybe I mean guarded and trying to protect, but I just don't think it's, I don't think Brad Holmes, I don't think that's stylistically what he wants to do, because he does want to be a contender for a long time, not just the next two seasons. So
some would argue with you by adding a guy like they will be contenders for the next several seasons, and they'll be sitting right near the top of the mountain for potentially the next. I mean, look at the way the team is now with all the contracts they've laid out.
Mm-hmm.
One could argue they are going to be, for the next 3 years at the very least, right there at the top of the mountain. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, no, trust me. Aiden Hutchinson and Max Crosby on your defensive line with Lee McNeil and anybody would be tremendous.
It
would
you
be
got one more year of DJ Reader after this.
Exactly. It would be incredibly difficult, but it's a cost. It's a very, very high cost. I don't know if Brad's willing to make.
And I guess that's a discussion for another day. We've got 15 we'll days or wait, no, more than that, 19 days before, you know, that ship has totally sailed. So we'll see what happens. And it, our show is kind of more like, hey, this is what just happened. This is what's coming up next. And it's a good thing we talked about it, but it's not necessarily because it's not reality. It's an interesting topic, but not reality yet for the team. So we'll see where that goes. And that's it. That's all we got. You have anything else?
Nope. Enjoy the game. Don't get too stressed out. It's going to be a fun one. It's two of the better teams in the NFL right now.
All right. And that's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.